From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in September when Abe Foxman made a surprise announcement. Foxman is the 80-year-old former head of the Anti-Defamation League. You've probably seen his work for many years. He's worked on anti-bigotry efforts for decades. He's worked against anti-Semitism. But he wasn't typically in the mode of publicly endorsing presidential candidates. Until now, Foxman wrote an op-ed in which he endorsed Joe Biden for president and described President Donald Trump as a threat to American democracy. Writing her own opinion piece, here's Hava Leipzig-Holzhauer, the executive director of the Konar Center for Tolerance and Jewish Studies at Nazareth College. Quote, recent years have reminded us the importance of not separating someone's business or governing success from the person they are. Harvey Weinstein is a clear example. Most of us who watched Harvey's movies did not see the person he was, but many who did chose to ignore it for other benefits he provided. No matter how many times President Trump makes executive shifts to the landscape in Israel, his lack of human decency should not be ignored, end quote. Abe Foxman is participating virtually in an event sponsored by Nazareth College. It's been a long time in the making, and we'll tell you about that coming up. But first, it's a chance to talk about these issues, to talk about healing, bigotry, and the future of American culture. Abe Foxman is the director and chairman of the Center for the Study of Anti-Semitism at the Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York City. Abe, welcome to the program. Thanks for making time.
Good to be with you. Looking forward to meeting you in person soon.
Well, we all hope so. And Hava Leipzig-Holzhauer is the executive director of the Konar Center for Tolerance and Jewish Studies at Nazareth College. Hava, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Both of you have had pointed things to say in print and otherwise, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But Hava, this is an event with Abe that's been a long time coming here. Tell us a little bit about what's happening.
It has. It was supposed to be in person, and it was supposed to be at the end of March of 2020, which, as we all know, was a time of lots of cancellations and changes. And so we kept putting it off because we really preferred to have Mr. Foxman here in person in our community, but then decided that the topic, the information, his wisdom was too important to put off despite, the limitations of doing it online. So we are hosting this event through the Konar Center for Tolerance and Jewish Studies at Nazareth College tonight from 6 to 7:30 p.m. via a Zoom webinar. And we're going to discuss a lot of what we're going to talk about today, anti-Semitism, post-election America, and issues of Jewish concern. And strategies for healing and re-engaging with those with whom we have polarizing views.
How do people get involved?
They can find the invitation on the Nazareth College website and then search Konar Center, Abe Foxman, and you'll find it.
All right, very good. And Hava, you know, for listeners who know Abe's work, he needs no introduction. For those who are less familiar, go ahead and give an introduction to the guest that you're going to have tonight and that we've got on the program here.
Okay. Putting me on the spot with this one. I was ready for it for tonight. But the bottom line for me with Mr. Foxman is I consider him a mentor and very influential in the direction of my career, basically from 2013 on. I used to be a litigator, and I worked mostly in employment law and some in the criminal sphere. And then I shifted, and I was hired by Abe to run the Anti-Defamation League in Florida. And it was a marriage of sorts of my advocacy work and my love for the Jewish community. And I watched Mr. Foxman work, literally watched him while we would sit at tables working through disagreements and struggling with issues within the community. And he is just a man who also is an attorney by trade, but was with the ADL for 50 years. And in that time was very unique voice in that he could be yelled at by one party or the other, depending on what he was saying on one day. He really never fit into a box like so many of us often do when we're giving messages and we kind of, pick our niche and we sit there. And that's one of the things that intrigued me about Abe's body of knowledge and what he can share with us is that it is very with the time and informed by a history of what he has seen over time. So, with that, you know, today, since rewiring from the ADL several years ago, he has taken on other initiatives, including at the Jewish Museum in New York City, working on the first ever permanent exhibit of anti-Semitism, as well as doing some initiatives with the Claims Conference on Holocaust denial. And I'm sure he'll share with us during our hour today some additional works with which he's involved.
Well, Abe, it's
I have a request, Evan. Can we go Abe and Hava and Evan and not Mr. whatever, okay?
You got it, Mr. Foxman. It'll be Abe the rest of the hour. It'll be Abe the rest of the hour. You know, so Abe, to Hava's point, you know, you've built this career doing the work you've done that hasn't really been able to fit too snugly in any one single predictable box or bubble or ideology. And yet, here you are in September coming out and saying, I've got to make an endorsement in this presidential election. Did you waver on that? Did you feel like that could take away from some of the work you've done to not appear partisan?
No. Well, I wish there was no need for it. But I felt things were not getting better. Democracy was under attack. Lies were becoming the norm. I felt I don't have the luxury not to speak out. All my life, Evan, I was involved in trying to get people to stand up, speak out, especially against prejudice, bigotry, racism, and anti-Semitism. And here I was watching out of Washington a voice which disrespected our institution, disrespected people. It took a while, but it actually felt good. And I guess I feel a little bit better, I guess, because the majority of us in this country feel a lot better today than they did 10 days ago. So, I'm glad I did it. I wish I didn't have to. But if I would in the future, I guess I will do it again.
And, you know, I've seen some interviews you've done in the last 4 years, and I'm going to try to encapsulate some of what you've had to say about this president, and then you can correct me if I'm sort of interpreting this incorrectly, or you can add to this here. But one of the things that you said was that what Donald Trump has done is he's pulled the lid of the sewer off of American bigotry. And that, you know, he's not responsible for all of what has surged forward, but he's taken the lid off and allowed it to come to the surface and really flow more freely. And at one point, the implication you gave in one of the interviews was, you know, that maybe you were hopeful that the president would, over his term, his first term at least, improve his conduct. He would kind of rise to the hope of the expectation of the office. He'd put the lid back on the sewer. I'm wondering this, Abe. There have been some who have argued that what Donald Trump has done is he has brought bigotry to the surface, as you say, and they view that as potentially, in the long run of the country, a service, because instead of kind of operating in the shadows or sort of subtly or covertly, it is much more out in the open, and it's easier to deal with something that's out in the open if you want to get rid of it and improve on it. Whereas others have said, no, he has grown the bigotry. He has given it more license and freedom to operate proudly, and it has only multiplied. So I'm curious to know how you see that.
Well, Evan, it's one thing to be aware and know that prejudice exists. And I think those of us who spent our lifetime fighting bigotry, racism, prejudice, and anti-Semitism knew that it was there. The Charlottesville 200 were not created by Donald Trump. They were there. But we had developed in our society a consensus of civility, certain understandings. Yes, the Constitution permits you to be a bigot. But if you're a bigot, there are consequences to it. If you're in politics, you're not going to go very far being a racist or an anti-Semite. If you're in commerce, you won't succeed because our society puts a price on it. There are taboos. Again, legally, constitutionally, you can be a bigot. But when you do, you pay a societal price. What Donald Trump did was remove that taboo. He made it, he emboldened them. So these 200, I'm using Charlottesville as the example, you know, they felt that this is the moment that they can come out of the basement, that they can come out of the cellar, and that they can proudly, in front of cameras, in front of America, say, I am an anti-Semite. I am a bigot. I am a racist. And that's the basic difference. Now, yeah, throughout the 4 years, listen, all my life I spent trying to change people's minds and hearts. So I am an optimist. And I was hoping that maybe the president would have a dream about World War II and wake up in the morning and say, you know what, there are no good Nazis. Because, again, he is the most significant, important bully pulpit in this country. Like him or not, people listen. We now see to what extent they listen. He's not responsible, but he bears some consequences for his language. I would rather have it in the open, yes, but we don't need a Donald Trump to get it in the open. It's there. We know it's there.
Hava, how do you see that question?
I see the same thing. When we're looking at isms, including anti-Semitism, often, you know, we're looking at the landscape of polite society. We're looking at the landscape of what's going on in the classroom, and we're looking at what's going on in government. And when it's not polite, you know, to say racist things, you know, to stand up for white supremacy, to hurt other people with your words, you know, we're safer. We're a kinder country. When it comes to the surface, and it is okay, it becomes a lot scarier place. You know, every day, I have 4 children, all teen and early 20s now, and every day one of them is asking a question about something they see online on TikTok that somebody says in a chat group, is this true? Is this true? And people feel a sense of fear that I haven't heard or felt from my social circles, my community, you know, my friend groups, my Facebook group, in a very long time. And that's because, you know, hatefulness has surfaced. And I am, you know, very concerned, but also very hopeful. And I hope, and it's probably more of a question for Abe, but you know, that we could put the lid back on this.
Well, so, yeah, go ahead, Abe, if you want to add to that before we can,
well,
go ahead.
You know, I think that, you know, when you're dealing with prejudice, prejudice is a lie. It's based on lies. It's based on conspiracy theories, et cetera. And what this president has done in our country is substituted lies for truth. How do you fight bigotry? You fight the lies with truth. He has destroyed the concept of truth in this country and has made lie and lying a norm. Evan, I remember in the years that I traveled around the world on behalf of the ADL, and I would meet with leaders of countries, and all of them would try to find out, you know, what's the best way to impact on the United States and on America. And I remember saying to them, the American people are a wonderful square lot. The one thing you don't do is you don't lie. You can get away with, you know, mistakes, and but don't lie. Don't, because the American people can't stand lies. And all our scandals, if you remember, financial or political or sexual, were all based not on what people did, but the fact that they lied. That was one of great norms that we valued in this country, that this is a country where truth matters. Well, he's destroyed the element of truth. And therefore, everything that you believe in is put into question. Everything you want to teach your children. The most important thing I remember teaching my children is don't lie. Well, when you turn on the TV or, or on internet, it's all lies. And hopefully we can turn it around. It'll take a while because it's now become the norm.
Well, let me go in a couple different directions here. First, let me read what Sam Harris wrote this week. Sam is a neuroscientist and known as one of the new atheist authors that's gotten a lot of traction. Here's what he writes about Trump. He says, quote, "There is a needle that we really must thread successfully. Contempt for Trump and his enablers in government is a patriotic necessity. Contempt for 70 million Trump voters is a serious error. What do you make of that, Abe?
Well, I don't like contempt, period. I don't like it against Donald Trump, and I'm certainly not against. No, absolutely. We won't heal if we have contempt for each other. But the problem is, you know, it's either you're with me or you're an enemy. We have to undo this you cannot hope that you will build bridges with the 70 million, if you have contempt for their leader. And maybe 70 million didn't vote for him because he's Donald Trump. Some voted because of taxes. Some voted because of theology, whatever. But still, he's their role model. So absolutely, no. If you want to heal, if you want to preach love, you can't have contempt.
Hava, what do you make of that distinction that Harris is trying to draw by saying, you know, it's important to oppose Donald Trump for a lot of reasons and his enablers in government and positions of power, but to take that same opprobrium and that same disgust that people may have and direct it to the 70 million voters that he has is not going to help and will actually be counterproductive. How do you see that, Hava?
I agree with drawing that distinction. Trump has made his own bed. He's done what he's done. He's an individual who has tremendous power. The voters, the people, those are our neighbors. Those are family members. Those are folks we share a table with. I teach civil rights and liberties law here at Nazareth College. And, you know, there are students have concern about Thanksgiving, about going home and the polarizing viewpoints at the table. So I think one of the reason when I talk to different people about it, that it's so challenging is because those who voted for Biden either cannot understand at all why someone would vote for Trump, and it's vice versa. And even if they can identify, okay, maybe they voted for Trump because of the economy, maybe it was their pocketbook, maybe it was abortion, they still can't understand how they did that at the expense of the concerns over values and kindness and those things that we want to teach our children. So we cannot have contempt for all of the other voters. We actually, you know, immediately need to work on strategies and ways to come together again and find common ground and move forward on important issues, because we can't be in a deadlock. Both from a political, policy, action-oriented place, or from our relationships.
Well, let me explore a little bit more of that with you, Hava, and with Abe. And I quoted your recent opinion piece that you wrote at the outset of the hour, in which you drew the sort of the parallel with Harvey Weinstein, saying that, look, for people who enjoyed movies that essentially came from his work, they might not have known who Harvey Weinstein truly was as a person, but for those who were around him in his orbit, many did know and didn't want to try to stop him, or were scared to and didn't stop him because they benefited from being in that orbit, or they enjoyed the work professionally. And that's not good enough. That in the same way that you make the point that if American Jews are feeling like, hey, you know, the president's pretty good on Israel, I'm liking what he did there, I can overlook this, you're saying we shouldn't, that matters. I spoke yesterday to a family member in Cleveland, and she was describing a conversation with some very good and longtime friends, and the conversation turned to politics, and my family member said, boy, I'm surprised that Trump won Ohio by such a margin. And she said, I admit, I'm in a bit of a bubble. I don't know anyone who voted for him. And her longtime friend said, well, we both did. And she said, how? Why? And they said, well, we think he's a despicable person, but he's in the right place on taxes. That was it. That was enough. That shocked her. So I'd love to hear from both of you on these ideas on what can we overlook? How far will we go? How about I'll start with you, because you wrote about this directly. I mean, what do you say to voters who might shock you with statements like that?
Sure. Well, I do just want to clarify that, you know, I've seen studies somewhere between 72 and 77% of the American Jewish community did vote for Biden.
Right.
In the end. But I think you know, people compartmentalize what is important to them, and it makes no sense to me personally. I prioritize the values of goodness to your fellow human being, and I also think the office of the presidency holds a certain weight that I want to be proud, at least to some degree, of who our president is. I think it is, you know, it's leadership and it's, you know, valuing who's at the top. And as Abe described, that, you know, making this it no longer taboo for people to say horrible things about different groups of people, you know, that's his legacy. For folks that voted for him for other reasons, you know, it's still hard for me to personally reconcile, but I think that the people who are closer to him right now, for example, that are still not stepping down, or we had Pompei, you know, who is standing with this farce that the election, you know, is not finalized and that the transfer of power is not going to happen. Those are those people that I was talking about right now. They are in his inner circle. They are the bystanders, and not only some of them are the contributors, but they're not leaving their, you know, some are leaving their posts and some are speaking out, but others are still standing by. And it's disconcerting.
Go ahead, Abe. What do you think?
I said a long time ago, I don't remember exactly where, we have to learn to walk and chew gum at the same time. And I'm talking about the Jewish community. And okay, so he's done some good things about Israel. So we say thank you, Mr. President. But he's done some horrific things on immigration. He's done some horrific things about respect for other human beings. And so we should be able to differentiate, to be able to say that's good and that's bad. What happens is that people get hung up. You know, if he does something that I like, then I have to accept everything else. That's the road to authoritarianism. That's the road to lose. And I will tell you, I think I now understand who he is and what he is. You know, I met him 30 years ago when he didn't like something that the ADL did. And I learned 30 years ago at a breakfast with him that he can't take criticism and he won't apologize. And it was about the ADL criticized him on something that he said. He arranged for a meeting with me, and he said to me, I never apologize. So, you know, he is what he is, and people know. What frightens me are those people who don't stand up, who, you know, you like his taxation, fine, but have the ability, the guts, the courage to say, but I don't like what you're doing with immigrants. I don't like what you're doing by name calling, et cetera. And the fact that if you have an interest that you share with them, that blinds you to everything else that's wrong. That's what's frightening. Evan, I don't for one moment compare Donald Trump to any of the past dictators. But in all my life, in my adult life, I survived the Holocaust in Europe. So when I grew up, I struggled to try to understand what happened. And you know what? I really didn't understand how a Hitler or a Mussolini got to power till the last 4 years, because I saw the intimidation. I saw the people following their interests in a very blind way. I saw the fear of people. There are people who, you know, who are afraid to stand up. When I wrote my op-ed, Evan, I received all kinds of emails thanking me for my courage. And I said to myself, what's courageous about it? Well, I found out very quickly when I started getting the hate mail, how ugly it was, to the point that, you know, some of it I had to report to the FBI because they're threatening my life. And so that's scary that in our society, if you take you voice an opinion, you get threatened for it, you know, threat of life. And that's what was out there. That's out there. It's a long way to heal. I don't know. I hope President-elect Biden will do what he's saying he will do. But it's a tough road ahead, because it's always been there to some extent, but it's never been as acceptable and as crude and as ugly and as public as it is today.
Well, and let me explore one more point, and then I want to turn this over to listeners who have a lot to say on these subjects here. By the way, if you want to participate tonight and check out what Abe Foxman has to say as part of a local event through Nazareth College and the Konar Center for Tolerance and Jewish Studies, it's from 6 to 7:30 p.m. We'll post a link for you as well on there if you want to see that event here, because Abe Foxman has been doing this kind of work for decades now.
Evan, can you just throw in there, because I didn't mention it, and it's extremely important. The Federation, the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester, is our partner, is Nazareth College and Konar Center's partner in this event. CEO Meredith Dragon was instrumental with me in planning, and we're thrilled to have them as a partner.
Absolutely. One other question for Abe from me, which is on the subject of a piece I just read by journalist Graham Wood. Graham Wood interviewed a scientist named Peter Turchin, who is originally from Russia. He and his family fled, ended up in New York City. He became one of the world's most foremost beetle scientists. And what he essentially said was, after decades of work on beetles, he had learned everything he had to learn on them and turned to the human species. And he spent the last two decades kind of studying sociology, how people respond to inequality. And he's made a series of predictions that 10 years ago looked a little silly. One of those predictions was that we would eventually have an election in which an authoritarian president would not recognize the results, that there would be public strife. Well, now a lot of people are going back to Peter Turchin and saying, well, what do you think is going to happen next? That's what Graham Wood did. And he said that the level of anger and vitriol that we have for one another is going to lead to a very bad decade. He said it is too late to steer this away, at least for the next 10 years. And let me read from the piece. Quote, "The fate of our own society," he says, "is not going to be pretty, at least in the near term. It's too late," he told me as we walked on campus at UConn, where he's now working. "The problems are deep and structural, not the type that the tedious process of democratic change can fix in time to forestall mayhem." Churchin likens America to a huge ship headed directly for an iceberg. If you have a discussion among the crew about which way to turn it, you will not turn it in time. You will hit that iceberg directly. The past 10 years or so have been the discussion, that sickening crunch you now hear, the steel twisting, the rivets popping. That is the sound of the American ship hitting the iceberg," end quote. That's not a very optimistic view, Abe. He thinks that we're so far entrenched in our opposition to one another and that we've drawn up political identities that are so strong that we cannot change culturally fast enough to avoid some kind of very ugly conflict over the next decade. How do you see it, Abe?
I don't buy it. I'm an optimist in life. Evan, I survived the Holocaust. 1.5 million Jewish children perished. I survived. I don't have the right to be a pessimist on the future. But I don't buy it because, you know what? We've been there before. We've had a civil war. We went to war against each other because of economic differences. Okay, we've had differences, very serious differences throughout our history, and we've overcome them. I think one of the reasons that it feels so exacerbated, it feels so terrible, is because of the invention of the internet, of social media. You know, ironically, when the internet came on the scene, we all saw it as a boom to education, information, communication, interaction. And yet we discovered very quickly that it has a dark underbelly that has become a superhighway for all kinds of terrible things. It's destroyed privacy, and it's on its way to destroy civility. And so I think we see the ugliness up front so much more than we ever saw. But it was always there. People ask me, Evan, is there more anti-Semitism now? And the answer is no. It's always been there. We see it more now. We write about it. We read about it. It's on social media. But it's always been there. So these differences have always been in this country. They've always been very tough. But we always overcame. So I don't see another civil war, God forbid, because little by little, as Hama said earlier, good people are standing up. Good people are standing up. And that's really the answer. And again, I go back, Evan, when when I was old enough to try to figure out what it is that I survived, what I learned was that there are two types of people that made things happen. Those were the bystanders who did nothing, and those who stood up. And again, Evan, I survived because there was a Catholic Polish lady who risked her life to save me. She baptized me, hid me, protected me, and risked her life for 4 years to save me. And what I learned was that wherever and whenever and however good people stood up, people lived, people survived. There was goodness that conquered evil. So I'm not the pessimist. I am not the predeterminist that now it's all going to be terrible. Because, again, the majority of the American people rejected Donald Trump. If they hadn't rejected him and we would be in for another 4 years, then I'd be closer to what's his name, Woods or Tishman's prognosis. But they didn't. They rejected him. He's still fighting. But the truth is, the majority of the American people said, no, this is not who we are. This is not what we want. This is not what we believe. And so to me, that says we're not heading for continued disaster.
Hava, what do you think?
I'm likewise an optimist and likewise hopeful and can't sit for too long in a negative spiral. And that being said, you know, we can't be stuck in our disbelief, right? The longer we're stuck in our disbelief that so-and-so voted the other way, or, you know, the longer we're angry or feeling the disgust, as it's described by many, in how those who voted differently or made different choices in what they did, the less time we're going to be putting into the hard work of healing and bringing people together again. And those aren't just words. I think you're hearing that from a lot of people right now who are speaking out. It's time to heal. That's what Biden said. It's time to come together. But it is incredibly important. And I think it's something we can do. And I see it already with some of the different things that people are posting, or, you know, there's a lot more messaging that is, all right, let's move forward. So I still think there will be a lot of folks who are continuing to try to contract in terms of social justice and want to act out and say what they want to say and not be PC and continue to have negativity that rises to the surface. But there are more of us. There are more of us who care about the mending and about getting, you know, back to what matters for us to live full, you know, healthy, happy, joyful, meaningful lives.
We have all of a sudden lit up the phone lines, and I'm going to turn it over to listeners after our only break of the hour. You're hearing Hava Leipzig-Holzhauer, the executive director of the Konar Center for Tolerance and Jewish Studies at Nazareth College, and Abe Foxman, the director and chairman of the Center for the Study of Anti-Semitism at the Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York City, and the longtime head of the Anti-Defamation League. And this is the kind of work he's been doing in his entire career. It's a name that you've heard many times over the years, and he is going to be a guest tonight from 6 to 7:30, thanks to the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester and the Konar Center for an event online. We'll post links to those if you want to participate. Let's take this only break and come back to your phone calls. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about the new Office of Renewable Energy Siting. The office streamlines and expedites the siting of big renewable energy projects in New York State. We're talking about solar arrays, maybe wind turbines, the kinds of projects that sometimes generate debate and sometimes complaint. Sometimes, well, legitimately so. Sometimes not. And we'll talk about how these decisions are made next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and let's get to our phone calls. A lot of interest in this subject this hour with Abe Foxman, and Teddy in Fairport is first. Go ahead, Teddy.
Thanks, Evan. My question for the two on your panel is, and this is in the vein of having opinions that could potentially earn one spite or threats. I ask, is being pro-Semitic predicated on support for Israel? Because it strikes me that Israel is becoming rather despotic under Netanyahu, and has been towards the Palestinians and the way that they have policed them and corralled them for many, many decades, which feels hypocritical considering what's happened to the Jewish people. So I ask, do you have to support Israel to be pro-religious freedom?
Okay, Abe Foxman?
No, you don't. You can criticize Israel, as you criticize the United States, and you can, there is more criticism of Israeli policies within Israel, probably per human being and per square kilometer than anywhere in the world. So no, it's not a question of criticizing the policies of the government of Israel. But when you do, I would ask a question, you know, do you set the same standards for other countries in the world? Do you challenge, you know, the United States? Do you challenge China? Do you challenge? If you set the standard, what troubles you to other countries in the world, I say that's fine. But if the only country you have a problem with is the state of Israel, then there's something problematic in your criticism. You know, there's this whole movement of BDS, which is to boycott Israel, et cetera. But that goes to the legitimacy of the state of Israel. Now, if you don't like nationalisms, you don't like American nationalism, you don't like French nationalism, you don't like Israeli nationalism, God bless you. But you better also not like Palestinian nationalism. But if you set a, you know, a double standard, I wouldn't say necessarily you're an anti-Semite, but if in today's age, the only country whose legitimacy you challenge because you don't like Prime Minister Netanyahu's policy is Israel, yeah, that's anti-Semitism. Because if the only country that you don't think has a legitimate right to exist is the Jewish state, guess what? That's anti-Semitism.
Okay, Haba?
Just one additional point, because I heard, you know, the bottom line question of the caller, you know, to be about, do you have to be pro-Israel to be pro-religious freedom? And it's kind of conflating two different ideas in the understanding of American isms or discrimination. And so we have equal protection, which relates to race and, you know, gender and nationality, and often anti-Semitism or anti-Jewish hate will actually, you know, fall under that arena. And then there's, you know, free exercise or freedom of religion in America, which is, you know, very much about making sure that we allow minority religious practices or those who aren't religious or those who are agnostic or atheist or whatever, to be able to, you know, have freedoms and not be required to act in a certain way for the majority religion. And so I think you can still be about pro-religious freedom in America and be anti-Israel. But I think, you know, what Abe raised and the issues of, you know, why somebody would be anti-Israel and not anti other countries or anti-nationalism for other groups of people, then that raises the barometer of some kind of discrimination or, you know, against of one religion or one group of people over another.
I would say also, yeah. I mean, if Teddy is concerned, I'm not sure about freedom of religion. I just wonder how he feels about freedom of religion in China or Saudi Arabia. And if he does, has he ever called in to any call show and can raise this concern about the lack of religious freedom? So I'm not sure. I'm not sure that's what it's all about.
Okay. Let me get Jim in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you, Evan. And thank you, guests, for being so thoughtful and deep thinking, because what you just brought up about the hatred in your earlier conversation, I think about the Jewish lady who survived the Holocaust when she was a 13-year-old girl and come to the United States and gets assassinated in her own synagogue in Pittsburgh. And that, to me, is the equivalent almost to the young people who were worshiping at Bethel Church in Charleston, South Carolina, where 8 people got killed. But I want to say something else. I was part of the 67 wall when I used to be a saltwater sailor when I was young. I was on the Guided Missile Destroyer, 1967, I think it was. And the Israelis had a top general, Moshe Dayan. I'll never forget him because we used to call him One Eye because he lost an eye during the fight for independence in 1948 during the establishment of the State of Israel. But anyway, that could have been a major confrontation between the East and West because at the time the Russians were coming out of the Black Sea down the Dardanelles and the Bosphorus, and the United States Navy decided to do one of the oldest naval maneuvers in the history of naval warfare, run a blockade with destroyers, attack submarines, aircraft carriers, cruisers. So that could have been a big, big-time collision. But we were lucky the Israelis prevailed, and they decided to have peace talks thereafter. So I understand exactly what you're talking about. And if this world is to come together and live peaceful, and cut all of this hatred. Where did all this hatred come from? That's what the $64,000 question. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'd like to hear your comments on that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Jim. Go ahead, Abe Foxman.
Jim, thank you for your reminiscences. There have been crises of which we could have had a World War III in 67, could have been that. Leadership in both countries, in this country, and in Israel prevailed. They came together. They stood up against Soviet expansion. So we were lucky. Jim, you asked, I would say today it's a $64 billion question, why people hate. I guess if we, you know, I've been fighting prejudice for 50 years trying to figure out why. If we can only distill the reason why people hate, then maybe we would come up with a vaccine or an antidote, which we haven't been able to do. It. It's part of the human condition. People who have certain needs, part of the needs, unfortunately, are to, you know, is to hate others. We don't have the luxury not to fight it, not to educate against it. And maybe we'll come up with a vaccine in the future. If we can deal first with this pandemic, there's the other pandemic, as you rightly remind us of. Hatred has been there and continues to be with us. So, Jim, thanks for reminding us of the good past, and thanks for reminding us that we have to continue to fight hate wherever and whenever we see it.
Let me get Trudy in Rochester next. Go ahead, Trudy.
Thank you for taking my call. You know, it's strange. We had, after World War II, World War II was over, and we had Hitler. He was a fierce dictator, and he didn't want to surrender, but his generals forced him to finally surrender. But he was a dictator. Comparing him to Trump, Trump is in a democracy. Isn't it possible to get him out? He is going the wrong way. He reminds me of more what we had in Germany under the Hitler regime. We don't want that. We want this type of dictatorship. Trump behaves like a little kid. You know, the president we have now, it's Biden. He's elected, and he's elected in a democracy. And I think the Republican Party, they should see this, that he is a danger to this country. You know, so, and more people voted against him. Why is it not possible to get this nuisance out of office?
Okay.
Tony, I think yeah. You should be, it will happen. It will happen. It may be very aggravating now because you hear and see things which are troubling, but I think at the end of the day, democracy will prevail. The president will leave the White House, and there will be a transition. I know how aggravating it is, and it's aggravating to people who have either lived through World War II and lived through dictatorships. But, you know, there are some similarities, but certainly not sufficient for us to be worried that there will not be a democratic transfer of power. So I understand why you're concerned, but I say to you, be patient. and democracy will continue to prevail.
Yeah, how about, I agree with Abe on that, and you know, to address Trudy's point, I don't know if there is a way for this president to resist the results unless he has truly gamed a court system. To me, it looks sort of silly and pathetic as opposed to the actions of a true strongman. But I also know that there are those like Trudy and there are those who feel nervous about this, who don't share that contentment that this may not be someone who's acting in a mature fashion, but this is democracy at work here. How do you see it, Hubba?
I do think it will come to an end. If you know, there was a fantastic article, NPR article actually yesterday that lays out all the different legal challenges in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and what the outcomes have been, and none of them have been substantial or favorable to the current administration. So there are processes that have to take place and will take place. There's a timeline on this, right? So, you know, each day there are more people stepping down and speaking out. I think each day there is some evidence of Trump holding tighter to his post, but those around him are falling. And I think there's, you know, some of the things, you know, that we can do, reflecting both the question of the current caller and the man before her about decreasing hate, is there are really some active steps we can take. Like, you know, one of the things is if somebody confronts you or if it's a friend or a family member, literally look at them and think of, you know, 1 to 3 nice things you can say about them, right? Or, you know, create dialogues with people who are in your circles who have different viewpoints that bring the tenor down, or find a subject matter you can talk about that everybody, you know, can find some common ground on. Or, you know, just knowing each other and being in each other's presence can help to de-escalate what feels like the hate and the tension. And then for people who are really spiraling and really worried, I understand that when you look at the headlines, especially if you're on social media, they are scary. So this sounds very basic, but reduce it. You know, pick some news sources that are balanced, that you like, and choose to absorb only so much media information to get facts, and not get worked up in the emotion of headlines, especially on social media.
Yeah, and Abe, I was going to ask you to kind of jump in. Yeah, please.
Yeah, I want Trudy to be nervous. I want the American people not to take democracy for granted. I want them to worry. I want them to worry, because if they worry, then they'll stand up. Then they'll speak out. It's when we're apathetic, we don't care, if we're totally bystanders, that bad things happen. So, Trudy, I welcome your worry, and we should be concerned, and people should know that we're concerned, and the leadership should know that we're watching. That's the only way that we're going to prevent disasters. So worrying at this moment is okay.
Abe, maybe 90 seconds to finish, and I want to ask you about lowering the temperature in the country. And I understand listeners who say, Evan, you talk about lowering the temperature all the time and bringing some of the emotion down, but some of these issues, causes, require a high temperature and passion, and I am not at all saying I don't think there should be passion or emotion or drive, enthusiasm, energy. I'm simply saying I'm talking about the way we look at people just day to day, walking down the hall, walking down the street, wondering how someone voted, and then judging exactly who that person is to their core. I don't have a monopoly on morality. I am always open to hearing why people do the things they do, Abe. How do we lower the temperature enough that we can try to hear each other a little better?
Civility. Respect. You know, I never liked the word tolerance, but for the moment, I'll take the word tolerance, which isn't good enough. But we have to teach respect. We have to teach respect for difference, not only difference in the way we look and the way we worship, but what we believe in and what we say and what we think. Again, I have I am an optimist. I have been and I will continue to be. I do believe that people can be taught to respect other people. Respect. You can educate toward it. It starts at home. It's in the church. It's in the synagogue. Truth and respect. I believe it's out there. I think more people are good people than are hating people. But we can't permit them to take sway, to take control. And we had a president who took control who's not a person of love, not a person of empathy. He's a person of hate. And so, yeah, but again, my optimism, he did not get reelected.
Yeah, well, that is true. And we'll see what the next 2 months hold for the world.
It'll be tough, but they'll be okay. We'll be okay. We'll survive it.
Abe Foxman is the director and chairman of the Center for the Study of Anti-Semitism at the Museum of Jewish Heritage in New York City. Abe, it has been our honor and pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Evan. It's been a pleasure. I look forward to meeting you face to face.
You got it. And Hava Leipzig-Holzhauer from the Konar Center at Nazareth College. They're bringing in Abe for an event tonight in partnership with the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester. Tonight, 6 to 7:30, we'll post links for you. Have a good luck with that, and thanks for participating in this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you, Evan. Thank you, Abe.
More conversation, more connections, coming up after our only break here.